Time for some home improvement. We want your questions. 514-790-0800. Walter Assey is sitting in front of me, president of Renovco, the man with all of the answers, hopefully, to your home improvement questions. How are you?
You can keep it general, too. Just answer.
You can answer if you have any questions about your relationship. Walter Assey will help you out there. 514-790-0800. That is our landline. You can start sending in your questions as well by text. 514, same number, 514-790-0800. You've been busy since hurricane, tornadoes, rain, flooding. Have you had a chance to breathe?
Volcanoes, earthquakes.
So, you know, Walter sometimes goes to Florida for work. And what do I always tell Walter? I say, be careful for the alligators and you survive every time. Last time you almost escaped I did.
Yeah. I had to run out of Hurricane Milton it was. Yeah. So that was a very short-lived trip.
Yeah. We had a news story a little earlier on the show, and I'm curious to get your opinion on this. There are calls coming in. We're going to get to Remy in 1 second. I just wanted to know, some of the people who have been affected by when the water main exploded, they still don't have access to their homes or being temporarily, you know, moved around. What are your thoughts on this kind of rebuild taking this long? Does that make sense to you, given what happened with the...
I mean, it's always long when you have a major occurrence. There are many steps to take. The city have to also, you have to make a claim with the city, you have to make a claim with your insurance. There is evaluations to be made. So there's a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, that's not an excuse for delays because they could have speed-tracked things given the fact that it was their fault.
Yeah.
Which makes it easier in this case to file a claim because, you know, again, there's going to be problems with certain...
This isn't like a weather occurrence. This is city infrastructure.
No, that's a lot of red tape to get there. And it's unfortunate because, again, people have very limited insurance.
Limited insurance, and they're stuck. They're stuck. Anyway, 514-790-0800. We have Remy on the line. Remy, can you hear us?
Yes, I have a question. I'm thinking about adding a second floor to our current house. It's around 700 feet. Financing is already done. It's just to continue. I don't know what the steps are. And if you have any referrals for reputable contractors or any team that can help with this process, I have no idea how to go forward.
So have you done any plans, architectural plans?
Nothing. Just financing got approved and that's it.
So the first thing I would tell you, and that would be the strongest advice I would give you, is to get plans. Have an architect draft plans for you. And the reason I'm saying that is because no contractor is going to be really able to give you a price without an accurate price without a plan. There's a lot of moving parts to this. So it's, you know, number one, you want someone to evaluate first, is your foundation strong enough to take the load of another floor? So they look at the thickness of the foundation. They have to look at the zoning. You have to see with the city if they're going to allow it, because, you know, if for example, your street is all bungalows and you're going to be the only guy with two floors, they might give you issues. So there's a lot of things you need to kind of do before you start collecting prices. And doing the plans with the architect is also going to allow you to kind of understand, even they can give you an idea on budgets, and they can also give you ideas, let's say the budgets they give you is higher than you want, they can give you an idea of where to cut to get a better budget.
Should you use someone who knows your neighborhood, who knows your area?
100%. So architects that work usually in, for example, let's say you're in the West Island, they work in the West Island, they tend to know the municipalities, the rules, the CCU members, the urban planners, so they can get you the permits fairly much quicker than someone that works, for example, in the East End. So there's no learning curve there. That's why we always say, like, and you know, they're fairly known, the architects, like, for example, in Westmont or
Westmont's tough for that kind of stuff.
That's right. So, I mean, you can't just get any architect. You have to get someone that have done many projects there, so you can, you know, can run you through the red tape way faster. It's going to cost you a lot cheaper, because every time you're going to change your plan, it's costing you more money. So yeah, I mean, these are the basic, this is where I would start. And that way, when you have a plan that is very comprehensive, that is very exhaustive and detailed, you can get an exact budget rather than, you know, people telling you, oh, it's going to be a range between X and Y, and, you know, which is a big spread usually.
Remy, do you have more questions? Go ahead.
Yeah. And would it be more advantageous just to tear the house down and rebuild?
You see, I'm going to tell you one thing.
To tear the house down?
Yeah. But I mean, look, he's that's what I was going to actually get into it.
Wow.
You see, it's funny you say that, because when you are building a second floor, you always, always, always have to take in consideration that you are renovating completely your first floor.
That's true, because you have to connect everything, yeah.
You have to connect everything. And the other thing is, you can never limit the exposure of the elements. Mm. I mean, you're literally taking the roof off and keeping
literally,
it off for, for, you know, several months until you're able to close it. So there's no amount of protection that's going to ensure no water damage is going to happen in the, you know, in the first floor. So it's very important to kind of factor that in. It's not really only the cost of the first floor, the second floor built, but it's also what you're renovating underneath.
But wait, I have a question. You can just tear down like that. Doesn't that need permission to do a sort of
restart? I mean, I would not necessarily, you don't necessarily need to tear down, because there are areas where you'll be saving money, in the sense that if you're able to conserve part of the structure of the first floor, you're definitely saving money there. The only time I would start considering tearing down, like if you're, for example, looking at modifying the sizes of the windows on the first floor or hiring the ceiling, then becomes keeping the framing does not make sense anymore. Maybe you'll keep the floor joists if they're in good shape, but the framing itself. So that becomes
an
whole
engineer
thing.
Maybe as well, right? Who are you
working
with?
You're going to need a structural engineer for the trusses,
okay,
for all the structural elements. Yes, so it's, you're right. You need, the architect is the if you want, the first pass. You start
he's
with
the idea person. Or
the idea,
is,
the design, and everything else. And then once you become more serious about that plan, that's when you would hire an engineer. I would not hire them both at the same time.
Okay.
I would start with the architect, and then I would get the engineer to kind of say, okay, now I want this to be executionable, so what are you going to do? And then they give you a plan for the trusses, they give you a plan for all the supports, and then you take it from there.
I'm guessing, and maybe Remy, I'm asking a question for you, sorry, but to tear down a house, is that pricey? I'm guessing
Well, the problem becomes, where it becomes an issue is it going to be considered new construction? So in new constructions, the permits are more expensive, there's taxes on new construction, so there's a bit more headaches to kind of get you to that finish line. To get the permits, it's longer as well. So there are things to consider, you know, when you say I'm gonna completely go with new construction. So again, you have to make the calculations. What are the permits costing? What are the taxes like? What is the length of time that you're gonna be in construction? The length of time you're gonna get the permit and everything else.
Remy, does that help you out?
It does. Thank you very much.
Okay. 514-790-0800. That is the number to reach Walter Assey, president of Renovco. You can call us. You can text us. That is the number to call us on if you want to ask Walter Assey, president of Renovco, your questions for your home improvement needs. You can also text us, 514-790-0800. And Walter, before the break, we were talking about Remy, who'd called in because he wants to build a second floor. And the question of potentially, is it easier to tear down the house came up. We're getting texters saying that it's very difficult, actually, to tear down the house. So I have a texter here saying that in TMR, it's almost impossible. It's a big project. So is there like a, I'm guessing there's a step-by-step process to be followed.
There is. It's not. I would not call it impossible. There are conditions, if you wish. Number one is the condition of the home itself, the state.
If do you have to prove that it's
yes?
Okay.
So let's say it's dilapidated and it's falling apart. You know, it's not just to keep things. There's a safety issue. There's a conversation to be had with the city, and then you have a foot to stand on, and that will help you in the process. There's also, I mean, old is not always good either, right? So you have, you know, in certain municipalities, you go to homes, yeah, they are built in the 60s, but they're horrendous. They don't have a curb appeal. And, you know, there is a conversation to be had with the city. You go see them, and then it's literally going to be a case-by-case basis.
Okay, it's not just because you want to do it, because you want to rebuild somewhere, that you're allowed to do it.
No. So you have to go and see what the tolerance levels are. And then from there, you know, you can plead your case and see how open they are to it. Now, if they don't accept it, there are ways around it.
Oh, yeah?
Including, for example, let's say you have a historic home. And right off the bat that there's no way they can.
It's just going to be no for everything.
That's correct. So now you can plan an extension. And, you know, now they like to do the modern, old, historic mix, which is beautiful, actually. So you might kind of doodle a plan that kind of caters to that look, that the beauty and the charm. And you can mix it with the modern marriage, if you wish, of, you know, the new section as well. So there are ways to demolish up to a certain percentage of a home while you're renovating it. So now you're not calling it a demolition. Now you're calling it
semantics,
a renovation. Uh-huh. And then you could, you know, transformation permit, we should call it, or a renovation permit, major renovation permit. And then that might cater to your needs. So you just have to be strategic how you're going to approach.
But don't ever suppose that just because you want to do it, that it's possible. Like in all things in life, by the way, I will ask you the question now. I've been talking to you about this question for a while. This lovely woman at the grocery store asked me to ask you, and I'm finally getting to it now. But 514-790-0800, start calling, start sending your text messages for Walter Assey. When people who are dealing with all the water damage, of course, from the water main, from the flooding, etc., a lot of people are worried that they're maybe buying a house in the near future that where all of this stuff, like repairs, will have been done, halfway done, and like paint jobs and coating will cover up damage, but the damage has not actually been fixed, that people will maybe be trying to hide the damage and sell the property. How do you know? Are you going into everything with the eyes of like, this is the neighborhood where this happened, I'm coming in with an inspector right away? How do you know?
Well, if you're referring to the October and to the August 9th storm in particular, there's no way you would know it by area, because, to be frank, it happened all over.
Oh, yeah, it hit everyone. Yeah, yeah.
It hit everyone. But there are a lot of telltale signs. Number one, I mean, you know, a good inspector will have thermal imaging cameras, moisture sensors, so on and so forth, so they can detect if something is still lingering or...
But it wouldn't be the naked eye. Like, you wouldn't be able to see, like, water line or something.
No. It would not even for an air... That's number one. Number two, the easier way...
Wait, what's an intrusive inspection? Like a camera?
Meaning a camera, a thermal imaging camera, moisture sensors, and the like.
Okay.
Now... The other thing that you could do as well is ask for the contracts that you've signed, that they've signed with the renovator that did the restoration. So number one, you're going to see if that contractor is licensed, and that contractor have an IICRC or a Clean Trust designation. That means he had the training for water and flood restoration and so on and so forth. And what's the listing of what he did? Okay. So if they tell you they had 6 inches of water in the basement and the guy just removed their carpets, we have a problem.
Yeah.
That means they have not really done anything with their walls. And now we have to kind of do a bit more.
But if they're hiding all this stuff, right? Because this is we're going at the basis that that the seller at this point will have, like, is a super honest person. And they're like, this is the work I've done. Here are the contractor's papers. If there is a bit of that, and it turns into a vis caché, for example, right?
Yeah.
But you want to avoid it. And you and I have had these conversations about inspectors in particular. Talk to me about the importance of choosing the inspector in this case.
So my advice about this is you choose the inspector. Do not get the inspector to be recommended to you. Especially, that's my take on it. So don't get me wrong. Especially not by a real estate agent. That I would, you know, ask.
They often work with the, in the same communities.
I'm
and they
not
use
saying
the
they're
ones.
Not good inspectors when they're referred by real estate. I'm just saying is, you know, just keep it as objective as possible, right? You want to have an inspector where not everybody necessarily likes, because, you know, yes, yeah, sometimes they can go to
overboard,
the extremes.
Yeah.
And I've seen their reports, and you know, you yourself would not want to even live in that house anymore. But at least, you know, you get the worst case scenario. Now, every house, there's no house that will pass an inspection 100%. Mm. It doesn't exist. There's always something. So you have to have certain tolerance and acceptance. If you're buying a house that is built in the 1950s and expected to be perfect, well, you're in for a surprise.
But if there are the mold, if there's hidden mold, for example,
yeah,
are you not buying the house or are you using it for a price reduction?
Well, it depends how badly you want the house. I mean, and it depends how much mold. If you have mold all over the house and, you know, you have to gut everything, then that's a conversation to be had, like how much you want to invest in it and how far you want to go, right? Mm. So not because you have mold in one room, that means it's a deal breaker. It's not like, it doesn't work really like that. You have to evaluate.
Walter Assey is the president of Renovco. I'm Joanne Brackus. And together we bring you the Home Improvement Show, where Walter answers all of your home improvement questions. 514-790-0800. That is the number to call in with your question or send us a text. So we have some text messages coming in for you. Somebody's writing in about, my house is 10 years old, but after evaluation by Renault Climat, they recommended I add insulation in the attic. And I was wondering if I'm getting a contractor to come in, should I add more than the recommended amount? Because in a few years, the norms will probably have been increased. Can you have such a thing as too much insulation? They didn't leave a name, but that's the question.
You can have too much insulation. If you don't want to choke up your attic, you don't want to block your soffits. So sometimes too much is not enough, or sometimes it's very bad for you. Having said that, the house being 10 years old, I mean, yes, the codes do change from year to year. So at one point we were at R40, now we are at R50. Also, there's something you have to keep in mind, that not because the house was built recently that it was necessarily built to code. Because contractors do mistakes. Contractors sometimes cut corners. Some contractors, not all of them.
So
there is, you know, there is a balancing act to see that, you know, and you have to have, that's why I'm saying, you know, you build a house, you can't trust that everything is 100% up to par. Mm. That's a good idea before you actually take the house from your contractor, is to have it inspected. As a matter of fact, it's always even better to have an independent inspector during the process of the build.
Yeah, because I want you to finish about the insulation, because like we just got a bunch of questions about the inspectors and where to find them.
That's right. So as far as insulation, I'm not surprised. 10 years ago, I believe it was R40. Now it's R50. It's not a big cost factor for her, so she'll be probably pleasantly surprised. But yeah, I mean, I would not go to R60 or R70, because right now it's R50. And R50, from the studies that's been done, it shows that it should be enough to really be very effective. So I wouldn't spend more money on putting more than R50.
Okay, thank you for that text message. 514-790-0800. Call us, ask your questions to Walter Assey, president of Renovco, or text us. We have a question here. Lots of questions actually just came in about the inspectors. We were talking about inspectors and who to trust. One of the questions is, how do you find the, I guess it's not an independent, is it an independent inspector? How do you know that they're not working with a real estate agent?
I mean, truth be told, most building inspectors will work with real estate agents, because real estate agents buy and sell and they meet and they exchange cards. So, but there are ones that are more known to be, if you wish, I wouldn't, maybe hated by real estate agents because they break a lot of deals. I'm not saying these are particularly the ones you should hire, but they tend to have a reputation to be very exhaustive in their inspections. Referrals, interviews, you should interview an inspector. You should.
Do they have an order, I'm guessing?
They do have an order, okay. Yeah. I mean, there are certain names that are a bit more known out there to be very strict. And you could, you know, definitely have a discussion with these guys and, you know, and interview them. I'm not going to name any names on the air, obviously, but to be quite frank with you, these inspectors that are very strict are fairly well known in the industry.
Okay. So you would ask around and you would know.
You would ask around and you'll know. And I would interview them. That's the guy that's going to save you money or potentially save you from a disaster, right? So you need to put a bit of time. They don't charge a lot for the inspection. So
how
that's
much,
why,
by the way? I'm trying to think about the houses.
Well,
that we
anywhere
bought.
Between 700 to 2,000, right?
Yeah.
Depending on what they do and how far they go. But because they don't charge too much, we tend to take the decision of who to choose lightly, maybe, because we figure out $700. But it's not really the $700 or the $1,000 that you're paying. It's what's going to come after that's going to be more important.
And so, okay, because someone here is saying, I got dinged after I made a declaration, made me wonder if I should have stayed silent. It's always best to tell the truth in this thing.
It is best because they can't sue you for it afterwards.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So if you could declare a million things, you could say, I have mice and I have rats and I have snakes and I have whatever. If they come in and you can get dinged, because getting dinged after is usually much more hurtful because you can't control the outcome.
Yeah.
Right? That, you know, in a lot of cases, people will want to take advantage and do more and renovate more and you know, demolish more maybe. Mm. So and then you have to pay the legal fees. So from the beginning, you have to be as upfront as possible so you can avoid all of that, you know, that mess afterwards.
Yeah, it's really interesting because a lot of people, everyone's asking where to find the good inspector. So you're saying they have an order. Yes, you can go find them, but you should always go by reputation in this case?
100%.
Okay, we have a call coming in. Linda is on the line. Linda, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Take it away.
Yes. I'd like to know if you would know of a good company or of a company for thermopump. Mine just broke.
Yes. Do you know what the brand is?
I have heard of Greer.
Sorry, repeat that again?
Greer.
Yeah, okay. And your furnace is the same brand, I presume?
I have electricity. And this is a thermopump, you know, that would go above my door.
Oh,
am I saying the right word?
You mean it's a split. It's a split. It's a wall-mounted unit, right?
A wall, yes.
Okay. So that gives you a lot more options, thankfully. You don't have to necessarily, because, you know, sometimes when you're replacing just a heat pump and you have a furnace attached to it, well, you have to make sure they're compatible and not every company would supply that. That's why I asked you the brand. But in this case, you could go with really anything. There's no any company. There's no restrictions because you're changing technically the whole unit. What I would tell you is make sure that you're choosing a unit that can work up to minus 30 because they do come in different qualities. Hitachi is to be, they're known to be one of the better ones as far as splits are concerned. So any brand that is Japanese is good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Although like the Chinese brands that are out there are not bad either. So, I mean, the technology is becoming fairly simple that they don't, you know, they're all, I would put them all in, almost within the same category. So yeah, I would, maybe if you were looking for a good brand, I would go with a Hitachi.
With the what? I'm sorry?
Hitachi.
Oh, Hitachi.
Yeah.
Thank you for your call, Linda.
Okay, thank you very much.
We have a texter here, Walter, that was writing about so many questions about these inspectors, by the way. You just said it's funny. It's an afterthought for people, but it shouldn't be. Mm. Texter wrote in, that's why it's so important for seniors, especially to sell as is in the sale, right? If you know that you haven't necessarily maintained, and it's up to, I guess, the buyer to be like,
So, I mean, there are different, you're right. So it's sold without legal warranty.
Yeah.
That's one way to protect yourself. There's, especially if it's a rental.
Oh, okay.
So if it's a rental, you haven't ever lived there in most cases. So you wouldn't know what the day-to-day problems necessarily are because the tenant does not necessarily call you every time he sees a drop of water. They don't care.
Yeah.
So in a rental situation, it's almost always recommended.
But for seniors sort of, you know, downsizing?
Yeah. I mean, look, the fact that you put without legal warranty in certain cases might make a buyer nervous.
But again, it's up to them.
That is correct. So if you don't want the headaches, that's the best way to go. You know, that is really the best way to go.
Okay, 514-790-0800. We have some calls coming in. We will get to them on the Home Improvement Show.
But before we go there, even when you are selling without legal warranty, that does not absolve you from making the declaration they're supposed to make. So if you had a fire before, you had a flood before, you had mold, you still have to declare it because you cannot... You know, not because
so there's no way you have to tell the truth.
You have to tell the
truth. Tell the truth and then say take it or leave it is
there,
what the as is.
There you go.
Okay. This is the Home Improvement Show. I'm Joanne Brackus and Walter Assey is sitting in front of me. He is the president at Bernofco. Lots of you sending in questions about inspectors, about what you should put in your contracts when you sell them, the famous sans garantie légale, without legal warranty. Calls coming in right now. We have Jerry on the line. Jerry, can you hear us?
I can. Good morning to you both.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Thank you very much. Listen, very quickly, we had an infiltration of water when that storm hit in our cold room, which is under our front step. So it happened where the front step joins the foundation of the house. So we had, you know, everybody in, certified people, drying fungicide, the whole bit was done. And we have a question as to whether or not it would be either advisable or contraindicated to put an epoxy paint on the floor, nowhere else. So we're leaving, as Walter had suggested before, leave the cold room cold and put nothing up there because it used to be insulation and everything else. But would it be ill-advised to put just an epoxy paint on the floor just to keep it clean?
Mm. No, it's not ill-advised. I mean, epoxy coatings are usually non-porous. That's the idea with them. They don't allow that produces. Okay. So it's a much cleaner way, if you wish, of coming in and out without having to pass a vacuum every time and what have you. Yeah, definitely go for it. There's nothing that's going to affect you're not really affecting the cold room as a cold room. The reason I say keep the cold room as a cold room is because mostly for condensation purposes, mold purposes, musty smell purposes, and so on and so forth. And the epoxy paint is not going to interfere with all of that.
Jerry, does that help you out?
Thank you. So my boss just asked me about our furnace. We all have one, don't we? We had a same thing happen in our furnace room where we used to have a plancher surélevé, if you wish. They had a Farenz and then plywood. Everything was ripped out.
Yeah.
We had a very, very little water, but I was wondering whether or not we could put it there as well. So
100%. Anywhere, okay. Look, especially in a furnace room, you don't need to finish it nice.
Okay.
And the fact of the matter is, in a furnace room, you might have all kind of different other things like hot water tanks and drains and what have you. And you might want to have it as exposed as possible. So if there is some type of a leak, you see it right away.
Okay.
So yeah, definitely go for it.
Thank you so much. And thanks, Joanne.
Oh, thank you, Jerry, and thank you to your boss. We've got time, I think, for one more call. George. George is on the line. George, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Take it away.
Good morning, Joanne, Walter. Walter, I'd like to ask you, yesterday I went up on the roof and removed the moss growing on it. So why does this occur? That's the first question.
You know, it's probably an area where do you have a lot of vegetation around? Do you have not enough sunshine? Do you have a big tree?
In that part there's not enough sunshine, yes.
Okay, so that's probably why. Now, usually to if you want to do it with if you want something that is easy or like a homemade formula, you could use just you get a pot and put like some dish soap in it.
Yes.
Baking soda and lukewarm water. It's all what you need. And that should take care of removing it. There are products, of course, that you could use, but you know, you have wet and forget. It's one product that you wet it and you just let it dwell and then you rinse it. But try that first because you know you don't need to pay money for a product if you can just do it yourself.
So if I use in what proportions though do I use is it dishwasher soap?
Yeah, dishwasher soap, baking soda, and lukewarm water.
What proportions?
I mean, look, if you are using, let's say, 1 liter of water, I would put at like 1/10 liquid soap and then, you know, just a sprinkle of baking soda.
And then just leave it there. I don't have to rinse it. Am I correct?
Dwell it and then no. Then you're going to hose it down, but let it dwell. Like put it there and let it dwell a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And then you could rinse it with a hose, a garden hose.
Okay. And the other thing is, when I remove the moss, though, can that damage the roof or not?
No, that will not damage the roof. As a matter of fact, it doesn't. No, and what you're using, that's why I'm giving you this type of recipe, because there's nothing abrasive or chemical in the materials that will wear the shingles from the roof.
It's not shingles. It's a flat tar gravel roof.
Tar and gravel. So
yes.
Okay, so it's you have the moss growing in between the gravel as well.
Yes.
Okay, so technically you would have to rake the gravel in order to expose the tar to clean it. Am I correct?
I beg your pardon?
You have to rake the gravel.
Yes.
To get to the tar to clean it.
Most likely. Well, what I did, I also removed it by hand. It's a little longer, but I didn't have to remove the gravel too much.
Okay. I mean, yeah, and that's another reason why I don't like chemicals, because you don't want anything to corrode the tar or anything like that. So if you go with that will be your best option, really.
And then it regrow. I'm sure the moss will regrow. Then what happens?
Try clipping. Like, I mean, if you have an area where it's really overgrown vegetation, if you have a tree, for example, that is overgrown, maybe try to have really the fastest recipe for you to kind of
get rid of it permanently.
Get rid of it, yeah.
I see.
George, just promises you're going to be careful when you're up there, okay?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thanks for calling. We have time for just a quick last question here on the text line regarding the epoxy paint call that we got before. About the epoxy paint in a cold room, should we paint the whole thing in epoxy, including walls and ceilings? And is this a do-it-yourself job or do I need a professional when it comes to epoxy paint?
So when you paint, you could do it yourself. I mean, it depends how handy you are, but you could do it yourself. The only issue I have with painting concrete foundations is that you will have condensation. You will not allow the humidity to escape from the concrete, and that will cause you longer-term issues. Do it on the floor, but avoid doing it on the walls.
Walter, they're playing.
I don't know who the heck is Oscar.
No, I was going to say, Walter, like... they're playing us out like the Oscars. You know, when they're giving their speeches and they're like, doo, doo, doo. All right, that does it for us. Thank you all for calling in. Thank you to Walter Essig, president of Renovco. We'll be back next week.